welcome to Community Presbyterian Church Sermon Podcast for Sunday, November 22nd, 2015. The Reverend Ron McHattie is preaching. The sermon for today is Building a Lasting Legacy on Assignment, One Person's Journey. The Old Testament reading, Psalm 100, verse 1 through 5.
So if you're visiting with us today, you are so lucky, because this is the last day of our stewardship campaign. Aren't you fortunate? Our stewardship time began the beginning of October, and it's been a very different kind of stewardship orientation as we've walked through this together. The first half was called Building a Lasting Legacy. And we managed to go through that entire teaching time without talking about money hardly at all and never talking about the church budget at all, but it was preceded by one letter. And we told you there would only be one letter. And we talked about legacies of faith, we talked about legacies of character, we talked about legacies that are monetary and their orientation. Now, as we were putting all of this together, the session also gave me an assignment. And the Sunday after we brought in our commitments for this coming year, the assignment was, will you do some teaching for us on a biblical understanding of giving? Because it's been a while since we've had that. So the first Sunday was on the Old Testament tithe. The second Sunday was, which was last week, was on the topic of New Testament generosity. And if you are curious about what we've possibly talked about, as you go out into the narthex, just to your right, next to the Advent devotional books, there's a gray pamphlet there that have the different outlines of the messages that we've given, and it can at least give you an idea of the material that we've covered. This morning, a few of the illustrations we've used over these past 6 weeks will be incorporated into this morning. This morning, I want to bring all of it to a tie, to a close, by talking about one person's journey on giving, and that's my journey of giving. Okay? And I want to precede that with a couple of verses out of Proverbs, which are the beginning of your sermon notes for this morning, and we're not using the PowerPoint at all this morning. Proverbs 1:7, it reads as follows. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. And that's in the translation that's in your pew before you, the New Revised Standard Version. Contemporary English Version reads as follows. Respect and obey the Lord. This is the beginning of knowledge. Only a fool rejects wisdom and good advice. So you know that I take these passages that talk about being foolish very seriously because my birthday is on April Fool. So, you know, I feel like these are all personal words to me. And there is a passage, though, however, in Proverbs that I do try to keep and is one of, it goes along with my personality of being basically an introvert, except for when the button has to be on and go. And that is in Proverbs, and it says, even a fool is considered wise when he keeps his mouth shut. There's a lot of people that need to learn those words. This passage in Proverbs 3, though, beginning with verse 5, is an amazing. The very first word is trust. On January 3rd, the first Sunday of the new year, I'm going to do an awesome message on the word trust. You do not want to miss it. Okay? Got it? January 1st. It's worth coming in for. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and do not rely on your own insight. In all your ways, acknowledge him and he will make straight your paths. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord. Turn away from evil. It will be healing for your flesh and a refreshment for your body. Honor the Lord with your substance and the first fruits of all your produce. Then your barns will be filled with plenty and your vats will be bursting with wine. And the bottom line, in terms of that last verse there, is basically saying is don't make God an afterthought. You know, God needs to be part of our initial, budgeting, however we work through our lives. God needs to be part of that equation. And we talked about last week, because of the importance of what God wants to teach us about lifestyle and generosity. And just how much is too much. Generosity has little to do with money, has a lot to do with heart. Has little to do with money, has a lot to do with heart. So a number of years ago, I'd say now probably about 15, I was at a conference back at Willow Creek, and the pastor there, Bill Hypels, gave one of the best summations of different levels of giving that I had ever heard. He had five levels. I thought that one of the levels two of the levels were kind of repetitive. So I worked it into four levels, and then I worked my own format on it because I thought it was one of the most helpful ways to begin understanding giving, and I want to use that as the framework in terms of my own journey of faith. The first level is personal gratification. And the passage that I want to refer to is Mark 12, in which we have a poor widow and a Pharisee both bringing their gift to the temple. And the Pharisee is just making a great big huge to-do about this gift that he's bringing. And this woman slips in and just drops almost nothing, a single coin, into the box. Jesus reprimands the Pharisee because he's given what was expected of him, but he did it in such a manner to draw all of the attention to himself as he walked up and dropped it in. We've all been in situations or whatever where we've seen someone who's strutted their way along to let everyone know how they're part of this, how they're participating or whatever. And, you know, we all have the same reaction, like, oh, geez, you know, just get rid of this guy. The widow, though, who slipped in and slipped out, Jesus said, that's the gift that's acceptable to the Lord, because it's not there for the person's sake. She was giving all that she had for the sake of the Lord. Her heart was in the right place. I don't think I can identify with this passage at all. This level of giving isn't part of my story. Fortunately, with all of the things that are wrong with me, I've never seen giving as something in which you draw attention upon yourself. Unfortunately, because of how I was raised, and we'll get to that in a bit, can't stand up here without modeling, but there's a difference between modeling and saying, oh my goodness, look at me. But I do appreciate this comment by Billy Graham. It's kind of telltale, more telltale than what we would like it to be. Give me 5 minutes with a person's checkbook and I can tell you where their heart is. Well, pretty powerful statement. Probably more truth there than we want to admit. Level two, this is where my story begins to engage, disciplined obedience. And the passage there is the passage that's typically used. We learn that there's much more to this word tithe than just this passage that gets overworked within the context of the church. Bring the whole tithe into the storehouse, that there may be food in my house. Test me, says the Lord Almighty, and see if I will not throw open the floodgates of heaven and pour out so much blessing that you will not have room enough for it. It does not say that the blessing is, three for one, $3 for every $1 you give. I mean, that's not what it's talking about there. It's much deeper than that. But there is this disciplined obedience in terms of giving. And as many of you know, as I've shared going through this series, that's the life I was raised in. I started with 10 cents a week, got it in change. One penny went on the windowsill by the sink in the kitchen, and I knew that went to church with me. You know, when my allowance finally got up to a buck, I got 10 dimes, one dime went on the windowsill, that went to church with me. Never got an allowance over a buck. If I wanted more than a buck a week, I had to get a job. So I started working when I think my first paper out was when I was in the fourth grade. And then when I was in the sixth grade, I had my dad in those days go to court for me and be able to get a work permit so I could go to work in a landscape nursery. And that began it. And I could do anything I wanted. Decided I wanted to learn how to ski, and my dad said, get a second job. So I got a second job. Yeah, I just kept on going. But all the way through that, my dad was just constantly in my face. Yeah. There was no joy associated with this level of giving for me at all. This was just strictly meeting a discipline. Because my dad would double check to see how much I made and would make sure that all the way along I was tithing. Jim and I get married, we're off to grad school. My dad still has the audacity to say to me, first 10%'s going into plate, right? And, my dad's not a harsh man. Wasn't a harsh man. But he just wasn't, it just was not wise to lie to him. Yeah, so, Discipline, obedience, well, guilt-driven giving, you know? But it happened. It began establishing a pattern. I get ordained, I'm in ministry, and you all know the story, or many of you do, how my dad would call me every fall and say, you aren't going to talk about stewardship this year unless you're doing it, right? 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 I got the message, Dad. My dad's been dead now for about 10 years, and I still hear his voice. He spoke to me this morning on the way down here. Yeah? Remember what I've told you all these years, you know? You gotta model what you're preaching. So don't preach it unless you're practicing it. You know, I'm in a different place than for many of you possibly in this room. For me, you may be saying, gosh, Lord, I know I need to learn how to be more generous. I know that I need to heed both that Old Testament and New Testament perspective on my finances, showing that you are a real priority in my life and what you're about. As we talked about, the tithe isn't the issue. The issue is whether or not God's number one and a forethought rather than an afterthought. So, you know, you may be feeling that nudge of saying, I've got to reassess things. I mean, I've been blessed more abundantly than what my giving reflects. For me, the struggle is, if I were to ever consider anything less than 10%, I'm sure I'm on the way to hell. Because it just got so nailed into me. You know, it's just who I was as a child and as a young adult growing up in my home. I don't have any regrets over it. But, you know, coming from different perspectives. Don't you love, before we go on to the third level of giving, don't you love this quote by Martin Luther? Oh, this is just such a great quote. It applies to about 98% of all Christians. There are three conversions that are necessary in our lives, he wrote. The conversion of the heart, the mind, and the purse. The heart, the mind, and the purse. And unfortunately, after 44 years of ministry, I'll have to say, in all honesty, not to lay a guilt trip on anyone, it's just an observation, there are a heck of a lot of Christians that have never had their purse converted. And, you know, I've shared a couple of those moments that I've had with individuals in my sermons, but well, it kind of comes down to this. Look at the bottom of personal gratitude. Isn't this a great quote? Stewardship, then, is not the begrudging business of prying loose our grip from what is rightfully ours. Rather, it is the joyful relinquishment of what never belonged to us in the first place. See, that's the transition that I had to go. Because I don't think I ever got to the point of moving into joyful giving until I was at least in my 50s. And in the environment in which I was raised, which I am thankful for, the negative part of it was the other 90% was mine, and God better keep his hands off of it because I had worked my butt off to get it. So it negated everything else. There was no sense of joyful gratitude that I had been blessed to be able to work and to earn and to have these resources in my giving. It was this drudgery obligation. Now, I married a young woman that came from a totally different background. And, you know, Jana's attitude is, well, gosh, you know, if that's what the book says, we're just going to do it. You know? And she was happy as a lark. And, you know, Jana would say, don't you think we ought to consider doing this? And I'm going, 11%? You've got to be kidding. I mean, this is 12? Oh, come on, back up, lady. You know? Where are you coming from? You know? I thought my dad was bad. But she always had this bright, shiny smile on her face. You know, well, you know, we're just so, you know, we're so blessed. That's ours. I'm not letting go of it. Doggone it. There's this verse in Deuteronomy 8, two of them, 17 and 18. It says this: do not say to yourself, my power and the might of my own hand have gotten me this wealth. But remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you the power to get wealth, so that he may confirm his covenant that he swore to your ancestors as he did doing it before. What it's basically saying is, God gave you the ability to earn the money in the first place. So that's really at the crux of my story, my journey, is trying to become a cheerful giver. And having a sense of absolute delight in the fact that we have been blessed enough that we are able to give. And as I've shared with you, yes, it has affected our lifestyle. Yes, it has affected our standard of living. But are we down and out? No. I mean, I'm just always so flabbergasted at how God has blessed us. And this is not prosperity gospel at all. But that has been a really hard journey for me. It's been a hard journey for me to come to the point of saying, wow, I don't think I have the ability to respond to this. You don't know how far the distance is from where I started. I'm not so concerned about what anyone gives as to whether or not they have any sense of joy in the giving. My hope is that in the joy of the giving, that it also reflects a priority that God has in our lives. But in the same way that this journey has been my journey, the journey of giving is your journey. It's between you and God. What is the right thing? The journey is getting harder because we're having to assess things as we go on, you know, fixed income and whatever. But as we were saying, is it excuses or genuine circumstances? Now, where are we each in the journey? I'm at the point now where I would just be delighted if I were able to do level 4. Situation here is David. He wants to build a temple to the Lord. And the Lord, the Jerusalem temple, and the Lord says to him, David, you've been a great man of God, but there's just too much blood on your hands. I want the temple in Jerusalem to be built by a king of peace. And that will be your son Solomon. However, if you want to provide all of the building materials, go for it. So by the time Solomon became king, the stockpile for the temple had been done. The trees had been cut. The marble had been, begun to be quarried. David just had laid out everything. He had this vision of what God wanted in the representation of who God was in the midst of this people in the temple of Jerusalem. Jim and I have had the wonderful experience of rubbing shoulders with some people who have the resources available. But just because you have the resources doesn't mean that you have the heart available to do kingly stuff. One example. A couple from Cupertino, when we pastored there for 20 years. Very successful in his business. Found out that the country of Indonesia is in such great want that they can't even cover the educational needs and the health needs of all of their people. So if you want to, you can actually adopt an island and make it yours. And even though Indonesia is the largest Muslim country in the world in terms of people, they don't care who you are. They don't own the island, but they've adopted one of the islands. They have provided for all of its educational system for everyone on that island. And you know what? They're all Christian-based schools. The government doesn't care. Just educate our kids. Give them an education. They've built the hospitals. They've built the infrastructures. It's just an amazing story. And the joy that is theirs of pulling it off, of doing it. And I go, how cool is that? How cool is that? Boy, that's, isn't that so much better than building a new stadium for the Raiders in L.A.? Oh, my gosh. You know, sometimes I think God must go, you have got to be kidding me. I mean, you can still use the Colosseum in Rome if you want to. I'm sure they want a football team. You know, but, you know, just, you know, we are so crazy, you know, but to have the vision, the foresight to say, I'm going to provide all of the children on an island to have a chance in life. Wow, man alive. I sure wish I could do that. It's a long ways away from where I started. Really, a long, long ways away from where I started. So some of you are saying, okay, it's been 7 weeks now and there's still been no ask. When is the ask coming? This is a church. There needs to be an ask. We're honest. There's no ask. How are we doing? Well, let me just share with you for a few minutes how we're doing. We did not meet our desired objective. We missed it. We know that there are some pledges that still ought to come in. If they come in, we'll probably bounce over it. There's always a lot of different factors in church budgets besides just the pledges, but they're there. You know, bottom line is, part of it is because of how many people in the congregation is on fixed income. We, as the session sat down and we looked at every pledging, at every giving unit in the life of the church this last month, or a couple weeks ago, with no names attached, so you don't have to sweat. And, you know, most of them haven't moved an inch. And we figured that that's because of fixed income. We're absolutely amazed at the faithfulness of the individuals within the life of the congregation. We feel that it would be responsible to ask for more. Biggest concern, not unique to CPC, it's a concern of every church, every charity, every nonprofit. Got 2 months ahead of us. If those who made a pledge for this year would fulfill it, we're going to be in a very good spot for next year. But about 70% of all of our pledges are behind, significantly. That's normal. So if you're one of those people that haven't been true to your commitment, if you could do that by the end of the year, that would be very very helpful for us. We know that Pastor Joanne is going to be with us at least until the end of March. We're in a good spot for that. We're trusting that if it's God's will, she'll continue to be with us longer. That's not shock to her, because she came here on the basis of knowing it was from month to month. Session basically ended its meeting Tuesday night with lots of laughter, lots of giving of thanks, and saying the Lord has really been good to us as a congregation. And we're looking forward to the future. And even though we didn't hit our mark, we have no reason in the world to ask. So there's still no ask. We feel that God has blessed us enough to keep going forward. And we're trusting that we're going to see that continue as we go into this next year. So we want to say to all of you in the life of the congregation, thank you. From the bottom of our hearts and from the top of them as well. Thanks. Thanks. And I would want to share with you this word. Enjoy your journey of faith. I hope that someday your journey of giving, that someday you can look at it and reflect on it. The good days, the bad days, and the growing days in the same way that I've been able to look upon my own. And as we do so, I think that God's going to bless us and continue to anoint us. And he's got a great future ahead of us. So let's stand and sing together a song of thanksgiving.
You have been listening to Community Presbyterian Church Sermon Podcast. To learn more about Community Presbyterian Church and its ministries, come visit us at 2800 Georgia Street in Vallejo, California, or visit our website, cpcvallejo.org. You can also email us at cpcvallejo@sbcglobal.net. Have a blessed day.